This is a podcast from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a nonpartisan research institute that explores budget policies and issues affecting low and moderate income Americans.
Good morning, everyone. This is Bob Greenstein. As you all know, the Congressional Joint Supercommittee has begun its work on how to reach its target of $1.5 trillion in budget savings over the coming decade. Budget experts generally agree that the single largest driver of our long-term budget problems is the relentless rise in healthcare costs throughout the U.S. healthcare system. And the supercommittee certainly will be taking a close look at Medicare to achieve savings. Since increases in Medicare and Medicaid costs per beneficiary are essentially driven by increases in costs throughout the healthcare system, the best way to address rising healthcare costs is through system-wide reform that affects the public and private sectors alike. And last year's health reform law was a first step in that direction. But we ought to be able to achieve some savings, specifically in Medicare, in the years ahead. There are a number of proposals to do that. Some of them have merit. But one needs to look at each proposal individually. And we're focusing here today on a proposal that's started to be mentioned a fair amount and that the supercommittee is likely to consider, but that many analysts believe is deeply flawed. That's the proposal to raise the eligibility age for Medicare from 65 to 67 years, which analysis shows would increase, rather than reduce, total health care costs system-wide and also risk increasing the number of uninsured people. To explain the issues with this proposal, we have with us this morning two of the nation's leading health care experts. We're going to hear first from Paul Vandewater. Paul's now a senior fellow here at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He was for a number of years assistant director of the Congressional Budget Office. He's also served as vice president for health policy at the National Academy of Social Insurance. He's the author of a paper the center issued in late August on the question of raising the Medicare eligibility age. And we're then going to hear from Henry Aaron, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. Henry has been writing about healthcare policy issues, along with other policy issues, for several decades and is widely regarded as one of the nation's leading experts on healthcare costs and policy. We turn now to Paul Vandewater.
Thanks, Bob. As you said, raising Medicare's eligibility age from 65 to 67 will likely be one option that the new Congressional Supercommittee on Deficit Reduction will consider, and the President may include it in his forthcoming budget plan. In a New York Times op-ed a couple of weeks ago, former Obama White House advisors Ezekiel Emanuel and Jeffrey Liebman argued that this proposal is, quote, a classic example of cost-shifting cuts that don't actually reduce healthcare spending. They just shift costs from the government to the private sector, end quote. That's exactly right. But it's even worse than that. Not only would this proposal shift healthcare costs, it would raise overall healthcare spending. The higher cost to individuals, employers, and states would be twice as large as the savings to the federal government. This makes no sense. The purpose of reducing the budget deficit is to strengthen the economy over the long term. But reducing federal health care costs by raising state and private sector health care costs even more goes in the wrong direction because it increases the burden that health care costs place on the economy as a whole. That's the big picture. Now let me give the details. In doing so, I will cite some figures from a recent study by the Kaiser Family Foundation that examines the effect of raising Medicare's eligibility age from 65 to 67, assuming that the proposal were fully implemented in 2014. According to Kaiser's estimates, making 65 and 66-year-olds no longer eligible for Medicare would reduce Medicare spending by $24 billion in the single year 2014. But the actual federal savings would be far less than that amount. Let me explain why. When the new health reform law takes effect, some of those losing Medicare coverage would become eligible for Medicaid, and others would become eligible for subsidized coverage in the new health insurance exchanges. The additional cost of Medicaid and the insurance subsidies would offset fully three-quarters of the Medicare savings, leaving one-year savings to the federal government of only $5.7 billion in 2014. But even that is not the end of the story. Raising the age of Medicare eligibility would also raise costs for most 65 and 66-year-olds and for states, employers, and people in Medicare in the exchanges. Let me give you five examples. First, 65 and 66-year-olds who lose Medicare coverage would face higher out-of-pocket health care costs on average. Two-thirds of this group, 3.3 million people, would face an average of $2,200 more each year in premiums and cost-sharing charges. Second, state Medicaid costs would rise because some of the people who lose their Medicaid. Third, employers that provide health insurance coverage to their retirees would face higher costs also, as most 65 and 66-year-olds receive primary coverage through their former employer rather than Medicare. Fourth, Medicare beneficiaries would pay higher premiums because relatively healthy 65 and 66-year-old beneficiaries would no longer be in Medicare's insurance risk pool. These younger Medicare beneficiaries cost less than older ones, but pay the same premiums, so they hold down premiums for everyone else. And fifth, adding 65 and 66-year-olds to the health insurance exchanges would raise premiums for everyone else in the exchanges. The reason is that under health reform, insurers may not charge the oldest enrollees more than three times as much as the youngest. But the average cost of covering the oldest enrollees is over five times greater than the average cost of covering the youngest. So insurers would raise premiums for enrollees under age 65 to cover the difference. These higher costs to 65 and 66-year-olds, state governments, employers, Medicare beneficiaries, and exchanges would total an estimated $11.4 billion in 2014, which is twice the net savings to the federal budget. Put another way, Medicare spending would fall by $24 billion, but even after taking those savings into account, total economy-wide health care spending would rise by almost $6 billion in 2014. That's because Medicare is a relatively efficient way of providing health coverage. It has lower administrative costs than private insurance plans, and private plans also have less bargaining power than Medicare with health care providers and cannot negotiate payment rates that are as low as Medicare's. And that's not all. The Kaiser study assumes, for the sake of simplicity, that everyone who loses Medicare coverage would get health insurance coverage elsewhere. But in reality, many 65 and 66-year-olds would likely wind up uninsured because they would not be able to afford the required premium contributions in the health insurance exchanges. If Congress repealed the health insurance reform law, as the House has voted to do, even more seniors would end up uninsured. In that event, 65 and 66-year-olds not covered by an employer-sponsored plan would be dumped into the current individual insurance market with age-based premiums, no subsidies, and no guarantee that coverage would even be available. And with more uninsured elderly, the burden of uncompensated care would increase. Finally, by shrinking Medicare's share of the health insurance market, raising the eligibility age would reduce Medicare's market power and weaken its ability to serve as a leader in controlling health care costs. For all these reasons, raising the age of eligibility for Medicare would be a big step backwards.
We go now to Henry Aaron.
One of the justifications that's often advanced for the increase in the Medicare eligibility age is that the so-called normal retirement age for Social Security is being increased. From what it was in the past, namely age 65, it's 66 today, and it's projected to go up to age 67 in the future. Wouldn't it make sense, so the argument goes, to have the same age for Medicare? That justification, as it happens, doesn't withstand scrutiny, because it reflects a fundamental misunderstanding of how Social Security actually works. What is being increased in Social Security is the so-called full benefits age. That's the age at which a full pension generated by the Social Security benefit formula is actually paid. It's quite different from when people actually claim benefits. People can claim benefits as early as age 62 or as late as age 70. If they claim benefits before the full benefits age, they get less than the full benefit generated by the benefit formula. If they wait and claim later, they get more. Despite that incentive, and it's a very large incentive, at age 70 you get 70% more than you do at age 62. Despite that incentive, roughly two-thirds of all pensioners claim benefits before age 65, and fully a third claim them as soon as they can at age 62. Only about 5% of Social Security beneficiaries claim pensions at age 67 or later. As things now stand, the typical Social Security beneficiary has to wait up to 3 years to get on Medicare. Under the proposal to boost the Medicare eligibility age, they would have to wait up to 5 years. Raising the age of Medicare eligibility would simply increase an already really quite problematic gap between the time people retire and when they are eligible for Medicare. Well, there's a second argument for boosting the Medicare eligibility age, and it is that it would be desirable to encourage people to work longer. Why? Well, if people work longer, they stay productive longer, they generate more income, and if they and their employers earn more income, they pay more in tax and are less likely to claim public benefits. So if workers work longer, it would help alleviate the long-term budget problem and, not incidentally, reduce the relative cost of long-term health and pension commitments. My own view is that the case for encouraging those who are able to work longer to actually do so is quite strong. Unfortunately, raising the age of eligibility for Medicare is a rather poor way to do it. First, it's worth noting that the trend to later retirement is well underway. Older American men are staying in the labor force longer than they did in the past. That trend began in the late 1980s or early 1990s, depending on the age group you focus on. But the key point here is that the nation has just gotten through passing a major piece of legislation that's intended to assure all Americans access to affordable health care. It would seem rather odd to come along now and say that a nation that wants to assure health insurance coverage for everyone, but, well, for those aged 65 to 67, it'll stop doing so through Medicare, which, as Paul Vandewater just pointed out, is relatively inexpensive for the nation as a whole, but we would continue, at least for some of them, to assure coverage in a more costly way through the exchanges or through Medicaid. It would be odder still to pull back on Medicare coverage should the Affordable Care Act be limited by court decision or political reversal. The bottom line is that encouraging workers to remain economically active is a worthy goal, but there are better ways to do it than to deny health coverage to a group, many of whose members face extremely high premiums because of their age or pre-existing conditions.
Thank you, Henry.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Read commentary from our experts at offthechartsblog.org. Find us on Twitter and Facebook, and create a My Center account at centeronbudget.org.